House Finance come to order. It is 1:30 p.m. on the 14th of February, 2011. Members present are Representatives Guttenberg, Representative T. Wilson, Vice Chair Fairclough, Volts, Co-Chair Thomas, Representative Dugan, Representative Edgman, Representative Costello, and Representative Newman. And Edgman, I think I called Newman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Anything for the good of the order before we start today's presentation, which I don't envision taking the full 2 hours. We are not going to go line by line through the two books, unless we can stay on a voluntary seminar afterwards if you like. Anything for the good of the order? Hearing none, I'd like to we need to put the bill on the. We need to put the bill before us for its first hearing. I'm not sure I have a copy of it. Just take a brief at ease. Back to order. We have a motion, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I move HB number 107, version 27-GH1740/A, working document.
Is there any objection? This work in progress. Hearing none. And I'll do the, my friend from Homer says, we do not intend to move this bill out of committee today. I think that went without saying, but I said it anyway. So I'd like to invite the administration up to give us the 28,000-foot overview. Instead of the 30,000, we can take just a little closer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. For the record, my name is Karen Rayfeld. I'm the director of the Office of Management and Budget, and happy to be here today to talk to you about the governor's capital budget request. I'm just trying to get things sort of organized here, and I appreciate that we're not going to go line by line. And I know there's a lot of, for us to discuss. So House Bill 107 is the FY12 proposed capital budget. The capital budget totals $1,612,598,600 in the bill before you. I'd like to give you just some highlights of the governor's capital budget request. Some of them we discussed briefly when I was before you earlier, but to reiterate, a key component of this capital budget request is $103 million of general funds to match or leverage over $705 million of federal and other funds for specific projects such as the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Federal Highway and Aviation Funds, which is about $623 million. Under the Department of Environmental Conservation, we also have $42.3 million for Village Safe Water projects. Also under DEC, municipal projects, we're proposing 9 for municipal water and sewer projects at $20 million. We also have included $5 million for the Municipal Harbor Grant Program, and that is a 50-50 match for specific municipal harbors. Under the category of affordable energy and lowering the cost of energy to Alaskans, we have requested your consideration of $65.7 million for the Susitna Hydroelectric Project. That's coming from the balance of the Rail Belt Energy Funds, and of course, you're familiar with the project for South Central Alaska. Also, a request for 20...
And Northern Alaska, the whole Rail Belt goes way in. I don't want to be pigeonholed into this. This appropriation is any narrower than some folks might think it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also,
Thomas is carrying it in the Senate for the record, so it's it is an interior project. That'd be Senator Joe Thomas.
UA and UAF.
Mr. Chairman, also we have requested $25 million for renewable energy grants, $25 million under the weatherization program, and $10 million under the Southeast Energy Grant Fund. Under responsible resource development, we're requesting your consideration of $10.5 million for access through three specific road projects, the continuation of the environmental work on the corridor from the Dalton Highway to Gubik and ultimately over to Umiat. In the current year's budget, we requested $8 million, and you gave us that. And this, in the 12 budget, we're requesting another $8 million to complete the environmental analysis for this particular project. We've also asked for continuing work on the Ambler Mining District access of $1.25 million and also for Western access. Key to resource development, of course, is our infrastructure development. You will see requests for $20 million for the Port of Anchorage, $20 million for Point McKenzie, $10 million for Skagway dock improvements for the activity that's happening up in the Yukon area and transporting that ore through the Skagway terminal. Also, we're continuing our efforts on gas line development, both the in-state gas project and the AGEA or the Alaska Pipeline project. You'll see requests before you for $160 million for the reimbursements under AGEA and $5.5 million to continue the work of the in-state gas development project. And as you know, that project will be delivering a report to you July 1, and these funds will help continue their efforts. Under
Going back to the AGEA funding, what was the thought process of taking such a big swath into the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation funds as opposed to other unrestricted general funds?
Mr. Chairman, as you may recall, we have proposed the AGEA reimbursement out of the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation funds for the last several years. That funding source, I know, has been subject of great debate over the past few years about what the actual set-aside of those dollars were for, whether it was for matching funds or for gas development. So it's just part of the ongoing conversation of whether or not that particular fund source should be used for this project or other projects.
It all spends the same, but I would like the public and all the policymakers to have a more realization that's real money that's available for other projects, so it doesn't seem like it's not real general fund money.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine was only a question about the money for Skagway. I was looking at your summary. It's mostly tourism you're talking about. How come you don't use any of your surplus cruise ship money on this instead of using Alaska Housing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thomas, yes, this particular dock facility will be able to be used by cruise ships who might dock there in addition to the barges that come in to move the ore terminal. You will likely see in the amended budget this week a proposal to switch some of the CPV tax funds for this particular project.
I mean, I think probably about 75% cruise ship and maybe 20, if you're lucky, 25% ore. So, okay, thank you. One other question. Is this predicated on them getting ownership from White Pass, or is this the White Pass dock and is owned by White Pass?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thomas, I'm not aware of any particular contingency as related to this. As you know, ADA is involved with the facility there, the loading facility, and this particular project will assist that project. So I don't think it's specific to White Pass, but someone who can get you that specific information will get that for you.
Yeah, I get that, because it does say that they're part of it. So I believe they own the dock and you own the uplands loading. So, okay, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all the capital I got in the budget, so I'm done for the day. May I be excused?
Mr. Chairman, if I can continue Under education, we have also requested $28.5 million for the first school on the Department of Education Early Development School Construction Grant List. This will be for a K-12 renovation at the community of Quinnagoc. And we're also asking for $19.9 million for...
We'll just take a brief pause here. This will all be recorded for posterity.
Mr. Chairman, we are requesting $19.9 million to fund the first 14 projects on the Department of Education's school major maintenance list.
Ms. Rayfield, remember my perusal, those appear all to be in Western Alaska.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the grant list in front of me. As you know, any school district in the state is eligible to apply for a grant, and those are evaluated on an annual basis.
Going down the list by priority, which we've historically done those, these just happen to be in that region, is my recollection.
Mr. Chairman, that I just don't have the list in front of me, but we can certainly provide that.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I was just going to highlight the different sections of the bill, what's in the sections. As you know, House Bill 107 contains 12 sections. The first section of the bill is commonly referred to the numbers section. This totals a little over $1.4 billion. It's organized by department, so as you look at the projects in the bill, they will be listed in the priority order by department. All of the deferred maintenance projects for each agency are at the end of the list, just so you could quickly go down and see where the deferred maintenance projects are included. The one exception is the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Their projects are listed by their program area. And within appropriations, the community projects are in alphabetical order. So theirs is the only one that's done a little bit differently than the others. In the capital books that you have in front of you, for each department, you should have a project review listing. And it'll have a specific reference number, and it will have a backup page number, and it'll show whether it's an appropriation or an allocation, list the project title and the funding sources. So that will help you find the backup for any of the specific projects that you're interested in. Sections 2 and 3 of the bill, pages 38 through 44, are different summaries of the projects that are appropriated in Section 1, either by department or total funds. So you can just see how a couple of different ways to look at the summary of funding sources. The language section of the bill starts on page 45. And Section 4 is the appropriation commonly referred to as legislative and budget and audit language. It allows for federal and other program receipts in excess of any of these appropriations that should come in after the legislature has adjourned. These projects may go before LBNA for consideration.
Before we get too far, whenever I say something out of the realm of accuracy, I'd like to correct it right away. Those schools, there are, as he was feeling a little deprived, there's three schools in Representative Thomas's district, the first 14 and one in Ketchikan. The rest are in Western Alaska. So, I hope you feel better now about the budget.
Totally.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Out of memory, also, I think the largest school on the deferred maintenance list last year that got funded was Service High School in Anchorage.
Okay. That's one of those once in a decade occurrences, and we'll
taking care of the urban areas.
Mr. Chairman, if I can continue on, Section 5 is on page 45, lines 17 through 20. This is a fund capitalization section. This is under subpart A. You'll see the $160 million requested for the AGEA reimbursement project. Through FY11, we have appropriated $185 million. For reimbursement of allowable expenditures under the AGEA project. This FY12 request will bring the amount available for reimbursement to $345 million. I know that the Department of Revenue recently provided each of you with a report of all the AGIA reimbursements to date and the anticipated expenditures under that program, and I'm certain would be available to provide more details on that. Subpart B of Section 5 is specific to the Help America Vote Act Fund. We receive federal funds for specific election-related activities that are put into this particular fund, and we occasionally ask for an appropriation out of the fund. And you will see $100,000 requested up in the numbers section under the Division of Elections for polling place access and improvements. Section 6 of the capital budget begins on page 45, lines 26 through 31. These are some specific fund transfers. Under subpart A, we're requesting $22 million to go into the Alaska Capital Income Fund, and then a $25 million fund transfer from the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation to the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. And as you know, the legislature has already approved $150 million into the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, and that has been made available for 124 projects. The Alaska Energy Authority estimates that by the end of this year, the Renewable Energy Fund projects will save 2.5 million gallons of diesel annually, and by the end of 2012, Renewable Energy Fund projects are expected to save 8 million gallons annually.
Hi, Representative Hedgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Karen, is this $25 million threshold, is that, well, maybe actually you can explain why it is, but the question at all for me is this sort of what AA can absorb at this point? The list is quite long, and it's my understanding that more was recommended than $25 million to OMB and helping yourself, but why $25 million and why not $40 or $50
million? Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, I believe that in the original legislation that created the Renewable Energy Fund, there was an anticipation that a $50 million appropriation a year would be made over, I want to say, 5 years, a five-year period. And initially, there was some jump start advanced funding made available, and it took the Alaska Energy Authority a little while to get the process in place and get their mechanism for considering their grants and the application process. We believe that they are up and running and ready to go. The governor's budget, as you know, proposes $25 million, not the $50 million that I think that there is some interest in doing, and it is a starting point. I think the governor has indicated that. But, I think that the program is working very well and people are pleased with what they're seeing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dugan, then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen, can you tell me what's going on in Section 6A, please?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, in Section 6A, this is the income on the fund. It's basically the Amaretta Hess Fund. And so what we do on an annual basis is take the income earned on that fund source and move it into the Alaska Capital Income Fund. That's a statutory fund transfer that we do on an annual basis. And then if the legislature chooses to make appropriations from the Alaska Capital Income Fund, that's the fund source for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So are there restrictions on the capital income fund and what it can be spent on?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, no, there are no restrictions that I'm aware of. It's capital appropriation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you're looking at the energy costs and you're measuring it to oil, do you ever measure it to what kilowatt per hour that community is spending?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I believe the Alaska Energy Authority has a very extensive inventory by community of all of their costs, and I believe that they would have that information for you.
Follow-up, sir? Okay. I'm referring to a lot of the wind projects that we've seen that when we sit down with our co-ops, are talking about equaling out what we're already paying, which for a lot of us in Fairbanks is higher than most places in the state. But yet I always hear how much oil we're saving versus are we really, at the bottom line, saving anything in energy cost of what we're using. So I would appreciate any information on that side of it.
Certainly we can get that to you.
Thank you.
Any questions on the
chair? I have one question. Originally, I believe the as it came up from the other body when we dealt with the weatherization was about $300 million, and I think it was $60 million was added on this side. And so we're at $360 million. There were some formulas on how that was distributed. What's the plan for the $25 million? And given that in the budget backup you refer to as the Lyman-Hoffman weatherization program, that really caused me some pause on where's the, I'd like to know ahead of time where the money's going. You know, I think it's been a good program, but when I see, I don't know, it's just that when I read that designation in the backup, just maybe just a direct appropriation to Senator Hoffman might be better. No, with all due respect.
Mr. Chairman, I am not aware of any specific attribution to the senator.
But it's in your backup.
I know you showed that to me. It should not have been, but it's not a requirement that be called a specific fund.
I would like it to be
fund.
The Bill Thomas and John Harris Renewal Energy Fund and all your the Mark Newman Voc-Tech tax credit support program. And anyway, I think I made my point.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, very clearly, we'll take care of that. But to your question about the $25 million, the $25 million in the governor's budget is proposed specifically for the weatherization program. The other program I think you were referring to is the energy rebate program, and that's one where the department reimburses or the AHFC reimburses for specific energy efficiency projects. So that but the proposal in front of you, the $25 million, is specific to weatherization.
Directly toward the grant program instead of the rebate, which was considered the more urban side of the equation.
Mr. Chairman, there are specific requirements for eligibility under both programs.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, on that line of question, maybe it's appropriate to get that actual breakdown to the committee, because as you alluded to, in 2008, there's $200 million to the weatherization side, $160 million to the home energy rebate side for $360 million total. But what I'd like to know, in part parcel of this discussion, is if, in fact, that $25 million does go fully to the weatherization side, is there money still in the queue for the home energy rebate side that maybe is still not yet to be spent?
No, that's what I was trying to elicit so we'd know, and because I knew anything on energy is going to prompt a lot of interest and questions. So I was chumming the waters, and we got the interest I had hoped for.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, we'll get that for you.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you. You chummed me right up. Since
that's a sport fishing tactic.
Well, it's working. In regards to the Harbor Fund, and I see Representative Osterman back there, too, and we're from water communities, and it's, you know, roads to resources start in our harbors, and both the sport fish, commercial charters, and commercial fishermen, and I've always been insulted when they delete or what they call vetoed that money out, because that's our road to resources, but it's not oil at the other end that we're looking for. Most of us are fishing industry communities, I guess, Edgman too. And so we like roads to resources, but it's in the harbor fund. It's been the last 2 years since it's been created by us, it's been half of the money has been always vetoed. And it's a matching grant program for the other members here. 50% of the money has to come from the local municipalities. So I think that's one that really helps communities. And if they just get out there and keep the money in there, we'd be grateful. But I know that you only got five in there now, and I think that people who are trying to build those resources would be insulted if that's all they had. They had big oil wells, or we have a mine too that I think they're going to go looking for precious metals someplace. But anyway, my point is that roads resources, most of rural Alaska, or it starts at the harbor. So I'm done for today. You jumped me right out of that one.
That's the third time you've been done.
I'm done now.
It'd be nice to have a detailed explanation of the how that whole energy, how you purport for that to work, and that's give it to the committee and it'll be distributed.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, we'll
Any
make that.
Any other questions on energy while we're here? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, and it might fill in on it's my understanding that the allocation around the state is made by various entities in the energy community based upon degree days, cost of a BTU, a calculation, and kind of who needs what, how, and how fast. And I know some of the money got used up pretty quickly in some communities, certainly mine. People were scrambling to get into the rebate program, and then there's a drop-off, and some of the money is focused on communities that were not as fast to get into it. So I'm just wondering if they're still using that calculation and making sure that every Alaska community gets what they need out of it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, we will get the committee information on the allocations and what's remaining in each of the programs. I think that will help the discussion quite a bit.
Joe Guerra.
Thank you. I think I just didn't understand the question. It was asked twice, and I must have missed it. But so you discussed how much money is going into the renewable energy program, which is less than what the original statute provided for.
The weatherization program is what I'm talking about.
The renewable energy program was originally slated for $50 million a year. And then the weatherization program, are you saying you don't know what's in the budget for that, or you do know what's in the budget for that? I missed that answer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I'm sorry if I confused with the answer. Under the Renewable Energy Fund, the $25 million that we proposed in the budget, that original legislation had intent language that there be $50 million a year. So what we're requesting in the budget for FY12 is $25 million to go towards that program. Certainly there's going to be more discussion about whether or not we should go to the $50 million level, but our starting point is the $25 million. And to the $25 million that we requested for weatherization, the money that we've proposed to spend in FY12 would go to weatherization, not specifically the energy rebate program. And what I will provide the committee from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is the breakdown between the two programs of the funding that's been committed already, what's available, the allocation of that, and then the addition of the $25
million. Representative Newman.
Through the chair, just a follow-up.
Representative Guerra, the chair.
So are you proposing no money to go into the home energy rebate program for this next fiscal year then?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, we don't have a request before you for the energy rebate program in FY12 at this time.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Karen, looking in the budget here with the Comprehensive Highway Safety Plan, you have $400,000 there, but I'm, I guess, unfortunate to have two of the deadliest highways in my area. Part of that through Representative Stoltz with 42 to 52 on the Parks Highway, basically known, most people know from Wasilla to Big Lake, became the first designation for highway safety traffic zone or corridor. And then on Kinnick Goose Bay, where we just lost two members of our community. Worked very hard for our community, but yet I don't see areas in this budget that are going to try and deal with those issues. I don't know if it's coming out as 400, if that's a plan to do that, or if you could explain that a little bit further in depth on how we're going to be dealing with our highway safety zones and funding to make sure that we've got those. And I look at the roads to resources, all those trucks go right down. Parks Highway and through there, if they're going north to all these roads. So how are we going to address those issues?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, I'm sure the department can give you more details on this, but what I can tell you here is that there is, between the Department of Transportation and the Department of Public Safety, there's a shared effort in the highway safety in specific corridors that you're referring to. We're utilizing federal highway safety funds for additional trooper presence, highway enforcement, also for public outreach and education on highway safety, and also some improvements that have occurred to those particular roadways. I know there are additional funds that are slated for specific improvements that are included in the federal STIP program for those areas, but the department can give you more of the specific details on that.
Another question, Madam Chair.
And just back on the DOT, it's been tough to talk to DOT. They're not quite through with their purges yet, I don't think. So as soon as we figure out who we're going to be talking to, maybe we can center on talking to the folks from the various regions. And it's all meant in all seriousness, because it's been very difficult with that moving target over at DOT.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that you share my concern on that, as you represent those areas and have for years to work with us on this. But going to a different issue, when I look at the track program, or the Trails for Recreational programs that are paid through a lot of federal funds, I believe it's 1.5 to 1.9 normally coming in federal funds, but I only see 250,000 going into the tracks programs, which is snowmobile trail grooming, a lot of access issues that were available in through that. Is there a lot of money coming, do you know, that from that tracks program of the typically $1.5 million, we're only getting $250,000 into there? Where's the rest of that money going, do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, I apologize. I can't answer that question off the top of my head, but we'll get that answer for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? We're taking a few detours on individual things, but as long as we hold it to a couple of projects per person, we'll make it through.
Mr. Chairman, that's fine. I'm happy to get back to the committee. I'm just
sure it's intense interest of individual members, which I understand, because I have it too. So, but we'll try to keep the heat from hitting too close to the mountains and the ground on your overview.
Mr. Chairman, that's fine. If I may continue, I think we're on Section 7, page 46, lines 1 through 5. This is basically a section dealing with authorizing settlements from insurance claims or losses that go into the general fund would be appropriated into the state insurance catastrophic reserve account. So this is standard language that you see. We don't always have that occurrence, but that's just standard language that we include in the appropriation bill. Section 8, which is also on page 46, lines 6 through 11, are specific to the National Petroleum Reserve grants. These particular funds, and it's estimated to be $5.4 million in FY12, these particular funds come from the U.S. Interior Department, Bureau of Land Management. It's 50% of money received by the feds for sales, rentals, or leases within the NPRA. And so it comes into the state of Alaska, and we put before you annually the estimated amount that's received. The Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development manages the annual grant application process, and these grants are specific for public services and facilities in communities that are directly impacted by leases or development of oil and gas within the NPRA. So what you will see, Mr. Chairman, in the amended budget, because they've just recently completed their process, will actually identify the grants that were selected through that annual review. Section 9 on page 46, lines 12 through 19, this is for the Alaska Energy Authority. There are two parts, Mr. Chairman. Part A is $2 million in the interest earnings from the Renewable Energy Fund appropriated to the Alaska Energy Authority for administration of the program. And subpart B is, again, the specific appropriation for the balance of the Rail Belt Energy Fund to be used for the planning, design, and permitting for the Susitnu Hydro Project. This funding will help complete the field work that will be required in order to submit a FERC application. I believe that AEA has testified to the timing being by 2014. If they can complete the field work, then they would look to submitting a FERC application in early 2015.
Kevin Gartenberg has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So assuming B passes, there will no longer be a reference to Rail Belt Energy Funds because there will be none. Is that what we're looking at?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, there's my understanding is because of the bill that's currently being considered, that would change the current configuration of the Rail Belt Energy Fund for this specific project. If that bill doesn't pass, this appropriation would take the balance and purpose it toward the project. The fund itself wouldn't necessarily go away unless we collectively decide we don't want that fund anymore. But until any projects or any activities that have been appropriated through that fund are completed, it wouldn't just automatically go away.
So the reviser of statutes will come back in 5 years and say to the finance chairman, you haven't used this name of a fund. Should we eliminate it? And that would be something to consider at that time. Otherwise, the fund would be empty, just be sitting there empty.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that would be that's my understanding of it. Mr. Teal may be able to give you some other perspective on that.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Riffall, I've got questions on both parts of this. In the first part, we're estimating that about $2 million, which is going to be thrown off by this fund, is going to be available for and, in fact, is going to go to administration of the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. Is that $2 million the total cost of administration there? Is it some percentage of that cost? How did you derive that number?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gutenberg, I believe that AEA has used the first time that particular mechanism was used as in a current year budget, and they built their budget around a combination of what their individual project management efforts are and their administrative portion of the budget. So I believe that the $2 million helps cover those specific costs, because when the fiscal note for House Bill 152, the original bill, passed, I do not believe that AEA received sufficient funding to actually manage this program. So this was an approach to being able to help cover the cost of that project. We can get you more specifics on their budget for their operations and their project management.
Yeah, I'd like to see that, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman. In Part B, we now have a pretty precise number, $65 million, et cetera. How was that number derived? Was that just the balance that was there that we assume is going to all have to be spent in the process of doing the things that are listed here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, the estimate that we have right now, the 65.7, is the estimate of the available balance in the fund. There are some other projects that were appropriated to that fund that have not yet been closed out. So, and if AEA has a specific timeline with some cost estimates that we can certainly provide to the committee of different steps along the way for the project. So this will help us get partway to that FERC application.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that I may be the only one at the table who's got this concern. Yeah. But making
I made sure there was maybe language about the unobligated portion or just
it seems to me that if we're going to be financing year to year a project, any project, that we should finance it year to year and not make a capital project out of it and start just chucking a bunch of money at it, which I think is the that's probably not the way you would describe that, Ms. Rayfield, but that seems to me to be what's going on. I guess what I should do first is simply ask if you could provide me with information about how much of this money is expected to be spent year to year.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we certainly can provide you with the AEA's timeline. If I could, though, specific to some of the discussion about projects in the capital budget versus the operating budget, because I know that's another discussion that we'll be having. Some of these, and particularly some of these larger, more complex projects, it's very difficult to anticipate timing and when things are going to move, when things need to happen. So the capital budget with the life of the project kind of language for lapsing provides some flexibility to be able to address those conditions. So that's part of the reason that we would request a project like this, a significant project like this in a capital budget.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. But essentially what we're doing is one of two things. Either we're taking a lot of money that, I don't know, some inventive members of the Finance Committee might want to spend on something else, or we're making a decision that we're going to go all the way through with this, and this is just the first, a pretty big chunk, but the first chunk of what we expect is going to be an even more expensive project. And I don't know that I may have been asleep when the legislature made this decision, but frankly, I don't know that sort of backing into it by saying we're going to use, you know, this much money to get this far is really the best way to make that decision.
This committee has made decisions on the study money that was put in a couple of years ago, and I suspect that if there was $73 million in the Railroad Energy Fund, that would probably be the appropriated amount. Because that's certainly not going to build the project by any means. It's going to get us to the step B. Unless it's just a mere coincidence, that number had to happen to coincide with the amount available, and I don't believe in coincidences. But Representative Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was waiting to ask this question, Karen, but actually I now have a segue. But that is my question. It's about the difference between the operating and the capital budget, and what is the administration's philosophy in terms of when projects that could seem like operating budget projects actually end up in the capital budget, and is it the timing? And I would like just a philosophical response. You know, what kinds of considerations are brought up, or what is the discussion surrounding those kinds of projects? Is it simply that you have more time to spend the money in the capital versus operating, or is there something else that's in play here? Specifically, when I was in the budgets that I'm looking at with the HIA, Travel Industry Association, their budget, if something is intended to be spent year after year, what kind of a discussion does the administration have when it's put in the capital versus operating budget?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Costello, there are several things to consider when we're looking at the operating and the capital budgets. And there's, of course, there's not ever really one answer that's going to fit all situations. But let me try to figure things out. Between the legislature and the executive, we've struggled a little bit over the last several years with appropriations in the operating budget that are, for example, placed in the governor's office and then allocated out to line agencies for various purposes. Gas line activity is one of them. The domestic violence and sexual assault prevention funds is another one. And where you allocate funding out to specific agencies for work within a certain calendar year, or a fiscal year, and then at the end of that fiscal year, you have to reconcile out all those internal, they're called reimbursable services agreements, to make sure you can close out the budgets. In cases where perhaps not all the funding has been spent, we might come back to you and ask for an extension of a lapse date on an operating item, and that sometimes gets a little confusing. It gets confusing to the legislature. It's difficult to manage those what we call multi-year operating items. So structurally, I mean, it depends on sort of the will of the legislature as we get through the session, whether you prefer that or whether you would prefer to have it associated in the capital budget to give you some flexibility from one year to the next. On a specific item, like, for example, the tourism marketing piece, what we have proposed to you in the FY12 budget is basically a starting point. We put in there exactly what happened in the current year's budget, with a portion of a grant going specifically through the capital budget to the Alaska Tourism HIA. I just forgot what the acronym stands for, but to HIA. And then in the operating budget, the amount through the Qualified Trade Association at the amount if we don't go back to the 50-50 matching requirement. It was framed that way just as a starting point because we know there's going to be a lot of discussion about where the legislature wants to go with marketing on a broader scale. So there, and then if I may continue, Mr. Sure. Chair, one other area I know that we've discussed a little bit in terms of the supplemental bill and we'll keep discussing is in the Department of Law, because we have two large requests in the capital budget for legal work for oil and gas related litigation and also for the British Petroleum litigation. Again, those are two significant areas where timing is very difficult to predict from one fiscal year when we bring the budget to you and what actually happens. So as you see in the supplemental bill, we have an operating supplemental for you, almost $4 million for the Department of Law. So there's not perhaps a really easy answer for you, but we look at them on kind of a case-by-case basis. There are also some instances where you have something rolling into an operating budget and then rolling it back out as a one-time item, and it makes your comparisons from one year to the next sort of difficult. So we're trying to manage all that stuff, bring it forward, and try to make some sense out of it for your consideration, because ultimately you'll decide where you want those projects, if you would like to fund them, where you would like them to be located.
Follow up. You know, I think the public is really who we're working for, and people in my district understand that the operating budget is what it takes to run government, and the capital budget comes in as projects that are one time or they aren't sustained over the long term. And I understand the 5 years give some flexibility because projects change over the course of time, but I think as the administration and the legislature are having this discussion, I think we also have to be aware that the public is involved in this discussion too, and their understanding is that the basics of government comes from the operating and the capital is something else, and that's why you find people who might say, for example, in my district, go to Juneau and try to reduce the growth of government, and then the capital budget in some people's view is a separate animal because it is one time. And so it gets confusing when I go back to the district and try to explain the growth of one or the growth of another, and then there's this other ballroom dance going on between different branches of government. And it's my, you know, I think if we keep the public in mind in this discussion, I think that would serve everybody very well. And thank you for your response.
Agreed.
That's more of a tango. And, well, it's good to start with the premise that we're going to try to separate them because enough unavoidable circumstances bring capital and operating in the capital because that's the only vehicle at the end. But you don't want that to be your starting point. Representative Wilson.
Sister Costello had my question right there to start with. I'm kind of following up where she is. And that's exactly on capital. To me, it's those one-time projects, the infrastructure projects, in which a lot of that goes to the private sector versus government doing it. And as I just flip through a lot of these projects, there's a lot of computer upgrades and telephone upgrades, and it kind of reminds me of my house, you know, when I look at the IRS and what I can count as a deduction and what I can't. You know, if I'm having to just upgrade my lighting or my furnace, most of those times, even by the IRS, those are just maintenance types of projects. And so I'm kind of curious why those wouldn't be in an operating budget. Now, if I wanted to go and re-side my house and do a major one-time project, pretty much you would see something like that in the capital. I guess I go and I'm having the same issue as where capital projects are where we put more of the job portion into our budget, the private sector. So is there any measurement whatsoever that those items in the capital budget will bring more job opportunities for those who are here in Alaska?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I think that part of the answer to your question is that, and some of the discussion that we're having right here is, in the perfect world, an operating budget would have sufficient funding to do replacements from one year to the next, sufficient funding in the Department of Law's budget to tackle very significant pieces of litigation that come up from time to time, the extraordinary items. But I think that collectively we've worked very hard to try to minimize some of the growth in the state agency operating budgets, and in doing so, we've limited some of our ability to address that on an annual basis without specific capital requests that come before you for computers or telephone replacement. We just don't have that kind of cushion, if you will, in agency budgets to deal with some of these larger equipment types of requests. So in an ideal world, I think we would, but right now we don't.
Follow-up, sir?
Representative Wilson.
The other part of that question is, too, those items that I feel really are capital and they are one-time, do you ask the community what their plan is to be able to keep those upgrades to those buildings once the state puts $2 or $3 million into a project? Do they come back and say, you know, we're going to put this amount of money away in our whatever budget we have so that in 5 or 6 years they're not coming back for the state to upgrade it, but they can maintain it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, for clarification, you're speaking of a grant to a municipality for a specific project?
Or just perhaps a school, and we're going to put in I think one of them was a kitchen renovation. And so if the state goes ahead and makes this renovation of a millionth of dollars, does the community then say, okay, once we get this one big upgrade, we can then start maintaining it by using these types of resources?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, in the situation of a school project, of course, you know, our annual school funding formula provides the resources to the school districts for their M&O costs. So if a major upgrade is made to one of their facilities, they would need to build the ongoing M&O into their annual school district budgets. Maybe I'm not answering that question. We can talk more about that.
I'll make one last, if that's okay. It just seems in the state that we do a lot of building new, but yet then in another portion you have all these major maintenance issues. If there was a plan when we first built a new building or did that to where maintenance was going to be in there, because obviously it's not. If maintenance was in there, we wouldn't keep doing these upgrades. Everything would be only built new. So I'm just curious when the governor's office looks at these projects and they are a major type of, whether you call it major maintenance or you call it new, something must have fallen through to where they weren't putting money into it so that because they had to come back to the state. So I'm just thinking as we know that our revenue is going to go down, we need to go back with a message of if we're able to give you kind of this jump start to it, what are you now going to do in the community to make sure that you can now sustain it? So we're not just adding another problem that's going to be a major maintenance later on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, specifically again to schools, I know that in order to be eligible to even apply for grants through the School Construction or Major Maintenance Fund, they have to demonstrate they have a preventive maintenance program in place. So some of the grants that you are seeing are really exceed their ability within their own annual budgets to take care of those projects, just as you see in state facilities deferred maintenance where we have not maintained or kept up with those facilities. You're seeing a backlog of deferred maintenance, which the governor's proposal of the $100 million a year over 5 years is to try to address some of those issues. But I agree with you that having some kind of ongoing preventative maintenance program is actually critical before we get into replacing buildings.
Mr. Chair, as you're aware, and others are, we're talking about much more than schools. We're talking parks. We're talking all throughout the state that we keep making our local governments even more dependent upon us.
And by definition, deferred maintenance, they put it aside. It's what normally you would say. It is an operating budget, and if you wait long enough, it's bad enough to be a capital project. We reward evasive behavior, and that's become part of the culture here. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I just have Kara. A couple. Oh, I'm sorry.
And Karen, I just want to go back to Susitna Hydro. Maybe you're not the right person to ask the question, but I just, I mean, obviously the greatest benefit for Susitna Hydro is up in the interior region where the price of electricity is very high. But has the analysis been made that Susitna Hydro, the amount of money that we would put into Susitna Hydro would result in lower power?
power costs than some smaller amount of money through some other project? Has that decision been made yet, or is that part of what the $65 million is going to be spent for?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I know that the Alaska Energy Authority, with the funding that had been provided previously, has done some work on reviewing the Susitna Hydro project, and one of the reasons that you see the bill before you now and the request here to continue on, I would defer to them for any specific analysis on some of the costs that you're talking about. I'm certain that they could provide you with answers to those questions.
And just a follow-up, and you may not know the answer to this, then, too, is my vague understanding is that, you know, I mean, when you've got to produce electricity through high diesel costs up in Fairbanks, that's not a good thing, especially when the price of diesel rises. But Susitna Hydro would be a project that affects the whole rail belt, and there's been some discussion that while Susitna Hydro would reduce electrical rates in the northern part of the rail belt, it wouldn't necessarily reduce electrical rates in the lower part of the rail belt. And I don't know what you know about that or what you can share with us about that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I apologize. I'm not able to answer those kind of detailed questions about the Susitna project, but we can certainly get someone to either come present to the committee or provide information through the chair.
And we can have a hearing with all the communities on Hydro and see how many complaints we have. I don't think we're going to hear any. We've heard nothing but positives. No community has regretted getting on Hydro because of the long-term stability. That's my recollection, but that's another debate. Any other questions you want?
Mr. Chairman, I just have a couple more
sections
to go over. And Section 10 of the bill is on page 46, yeah. Lines 20. It's a grant to the Life Alaska Donor Services Incorporated for the Anatomical Gift Awareness Fund. I think you're all familiar with that. Section 11 is the lapse provisions for the various sections of the bill having to do with fund capitalizations do not lapse. So sections 5, 6, and 7-1 are fund capitalizations. Sections 8 and 9, the NPRA grants and Susitna Hydro are capital projects. And then named recipient grants, of course, do not lapse unless otherwise stated, or are a capital appropriation unless otherwise stated. And then section 12 is the effective date of the bill, July 1 of 2011.
Any other questions? Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if the committee is going to have the Alaska Energy Authority or maybe an opportunity to have a hearing on sort of all these energy issues down the road. But
you just asked and we'll set it up.
Okay, well, maybe I can put that request forward then.
Yeah, just a little task if
that's appropriate. And
it's a big part of our budget, so that's very appropriate.
Great, thank you. I'll just save my question for that hearing.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Rayfield. We'll come back to this issue later on. I'd like to invite Mr. Armstrong up go over some CAPSIS information, which is, I forget what the acronym for CAPSIS, what that stands for. Welcome, Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, James Armstrong, staff to Representative Stoltz. Last Friday, the community submission deadline expired at 5. To put it in perspective, 2 years ago, we had 1,117 project requests. Last year, 1,439. And according to Mr. Carpenter, this year, 1,576 project requests. So,
can you really help us? I forget what the acronym CAPSIS stands for.
I forget too, sir.
It's an improvement on recording our capital project requests. It's all digital online it removes the cumbersome process of having big binders, which would occasionally get misplaced, easily transferred from committee to committee on the House to the Senate and to the administration when OMB does review, and it's been a vast improvement. Communities and nonprofits and individual legislators just call up either Senator Stedman's office or my office to get a password set up to submit those. And it's been a good improvement. and as long as I have some smart people and know how to use it. That appreciate that update, Mr. Armstrong.
Questions?
Senator Representative Thomas.
Yeah, Jim, do you know what the total amount of requests are? I mean, we haven't even got into the capital yet, and it's already two books wide.
Well, the governor's request is $1.68 billion. Last year, of the 1,439 requests, that equated to $2.5 billion. I think we need a bigger version, better version of Excel to calculate this year's request.
So, capital request.
Yeah, how big was the final capital? Was 2.9 last year?
It's 2.4, 2.5 last year. I just talked to Ms. Carpenter. They haven't quite figured it out, but I'll email you.
So it gives us about $800 million to put into the capital budget this year?
I'm not at liberty.
That's my math.
It stands for Capital Project Submission and Information System.
Just close out your tongue.
two other things. All the offices now can view statewide requests on your individual CAPSIS and projects in your own specific districts. The deadline for your offices, all 60 offices, is to present your capital budget priorities is Monday, 2 weeks from today at 5 o'clock. And on a technical note, staff in the other body and staff in this body will have a technical training session tomorrow at noon. So that's all I have.
Just a comment if we're about ready to wrap this up, Mr. Chairman. recognizing this and the other bodies' duty to appropriate and be the bodies that do the appropriations, very grateful that earmarks is still alive and well because they actually are more representative of the need sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, of the districts that we serve.
Any other questions? Well, Mr. Armstrong is up there. Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. Tomorrow, we do not have a hearing in finance. It's just too bad there's not a whole building full of mayors and assemblymen to fill up your hour and a half, 2 hours. On Wednesday, we will have two bills before us. It says on your temp licenses for professionals, it's temporary professional licenses for spouses of military personnel. And that's House Bill 28 and House Bill 65, Senior Citizen Housing Development Fund Grants. We're anxious to hear that one. So, but are there any other questions? And just while we're here, on Thursday, we will have our discussion with our Attorney General, our Commissioner of DNR. I believe, I'm not certain of the individual, I think it's going to be Mr. Rock from Ernie Slope Regional Corporation and Mayor Anna from the North Slope Borough, those four talking about federal regulatory issues and actions that affect the ability to live and work in Alaska in the broadest sense. So we'll hear perspectives from the folks above the Brooks Range and our Attorney General and DNR Commissioner all at the table. I'm looking forward to that opportunity to hear those folks. Anything else for the good of the body before we adjourn? That we're adjourned until Wednesday at 1:30.